This episode of Weed Like a Word was recorded via social media during lockdown conditions in the 2020 coronavirus epidemic. Consequently, the sound quality is a bit ropey at times, and so indeed is the quality of the presenters. But nevertheless, enjoy the show.
Like a word
about working class writers getting ahead in publishing. You're listening to Weed Like a Word with me, Paul Waters,
and me, Stephen Colgan.
And in this episode we have Dougie Brimson. He must be one of the most successful writers that you may not have heard of, although some of you will have done. Sold a million books, is that right, Dougie?
Yeah, that's about right.
Wow.
He wrote Green Street, the film Green Street. He had Elijah Wood and Charlie Hunnam. He wrote kind of non-fiction, Everywhere We Go, about football fans and also hooliganism in English football. And fiction like The Crew. And his latest book is called In the Know. So he's written screenplays, he's written novels, he's written non-fiction. He's kind of done it all. He's going to
He's done comedy as well.
He's going to tell us all about it. But tell us about your latest book, first of all.
In the Know is the third book in a trilogy which first saw the light of day in 2000. It came about because I was approached by Linda LaPlante to help her with a football hooligan-related plotline in one of her thrillers. The plotline she had was rubbish, and so I told her it was rubbish, which she kind of appreciates, that kind of honesty. And she said, go away and come up with something else. And I came up with a plot line which she loved, ITV didn't like, because there was an element of xenophobia, shall we say, in the plot line. But she told me to write a book, and write a book based on that plot line. And I said, well, I've never done fiction before, but if I write it, will you give me a cover quote for it? Which she did. And that book came out, and that was The Crew. A few years after that, I did Top Dog, which featured the same central character. And I did him because readers were asking me what that character had done next. Because like all my novels, The Crew got a massive twist at the end. So I wrote the Top Dog. That did really well. We ended up filming that, actually. I adapted that for the screen. That did really well. And then I still had people asking me about this character, what happened to him next. I'd had an idea for a movie based on, you know, some of the things that were going on in British society at that time. And then I had an idea for another movie about another element of what was going on in shortly after the talks had begun about Brexit and leaving the EU. And in the end, I thought, if I wrap it all up, there's a story here. And so that became In the Know. And basically, it's the story of how Billy, my central character, kicks off with a tragedy which befalls my central character. And he goes after revenge. He swears revenge on the people who caused this angst for him. And he's offered an alternative method of revenge because the police are all over him like a rash. And he sees an opportunity, and he's all about opportunity because he's driven by, you know, the quest for power and influence. And he just jumps on the back of this and pushes it for as far as he possibly can. And it takes him far further than he could possibly have hoped. And it features everything from bent coppers, bent politicians, bent journalists. Not that, well, there's lots of violence hinted at, but there's not actually that much violence in the book. I didn't really realise that. But it's a great story. I think it's a very good story. It's very current with what's going on at the moment. Every review I've had of it so far has been 5 stars, so everybody loves it. Even Goodreads are starting to give me decent reviews, which is a first.
What?
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm really pleased with it. And it's I've already got people asking me for another one, which, given it's a trilogy and there's already 3 books, I don't know what I'm going to do about that.
Well, Douglas Adams, yeah, didn't let that stop him.
No. I don't think it'll be stopping me. I mean, I'd like to write a prequel. I always wanted to do that, write something set in the 80s, around football in the 80s. But
Nostalgia's always good. Nostalgia's always a good seller.
The problem with nostalgia is, if you don't get it nailed on, especially with something like football, because football fans, and particularly in that culture, are so anally retentive, it's frightening. I mean, I wrote Everywhere We Go with my brother. That came out in 96, and I still get people criticising elements of it. And it's like 24 years ago, you know, have a word.
It takes me back, actually, to something you said when you were talking about Linda LaPlante, when he said that the TV didn't like the fact that, I presume it was a character who was quite xenophobic, yeah?
No, it was about, it's about English football fans. And a group of them travel abroad, and it's, they didn't like certain elements that were in the plot line, but they were fundamental to the plot line.
There's a weird problem you sometimes get with script writing, with book writing, where you'll get the agent or the commissioner come back and say, oh, I don't like them saying that. So, well, that's what they would have said at the time, or that's what this sort of character would have said. I was talking to Mary Jane Baker a couple of weeks ago, who's in a completely different field. She's writing romantic fiction, but she says, you know, it's something they called the vegan Viking. You know, you can't retrospectively fit modern mores and tastes onto something that happened in the past, because you've got to be honest to the characters.
I'm lucky in that sense because I know my subject, and I think my record proves that I know my subject. So I'm certainly not going to be talked down to some 25-year-old bird named Sarah who's telling me what they would and wouldn't have said in the 1980s. But as I say, you know, you talk about the difference between screen and book. Books are my babies. Screenplays are a collaboration, and they're a collaboration from the first key I tap on a keyboard to the second someone shouts cut. Everything's open to change. And it's a difficult transition in that respect, but it's quite interesting in other respects, which is why I do it. If I didn't do it, I wouldn't, you know, didn't like it, I wouldn't do it, of course.
So you've had great success with film writing, and you're well known for Green Street, and yet you're quite scathing about the process. You've written quite scathingly about it, and having to collaborate with all these fools and interfering with your vision. How does that work?
As I say, I mean, I go into a project, and one of the first meetings I have with these people is I'll always say, I'm not precious about this. This is your, you know, once I give it to you, it's your script. And my job is to help the director put his vision to the screen. And I'll do whatever I have to do to help him do that. But what I won't do is compromise authenticity or my own integrity in the quest for money or a credit. I just won't do it. So if something's especially wrong, or someone's telling me this is how it would have happened, and I know they're wrong, then I'll call them out on it and I won't put up with it. And if it gets to the point where I stop enjoying it, I'll just walk. Because it's, screenwriting is a hobby for me. And that's why I don't do that much of it. I'll only work on projects that I really enjoy. If that makes me a pain or difficult to work with.
I don't think it does. I mean, I've worked with a lot of TV and film people in the last couple of decades, and I hear this story over and over again. Everyone accepts, in fact, John Rain talked about it in the last episode as well that we recorded when we were talking about Bond films. You have to accept that a written story is very different to a filmed story, and they're of necessity, there are always going to be changes moving from one medium to the other. But the number of times I hear from people that collaboration is okay, but, you know, when you've got your first day of filming in the can, already someone's coming in with a page full of notes, and the actor suggesting, well, what if my character does this instead? And then what if it... And I know the great John Lloyd, who I worked for nearly 10 years, he's had two or three attempts at making feature films completely scuppered by the fact that they've said to him, hey, we love your concept. I mean, Johnny English is a case in point. People approached him and said, love your concept, want to make a film out of it. He sits down, writes a screenplay with Rowan Atkinson and Richard Curtis and people. Wonderful script, hands it in. By the time the film was finished, nothing like the original script. It bombs it bombs. And of course, in the classic way it always happens is, if a film is successful, it's, oh, weren't the actors brilliant? Wasn't the director fantastic? If the film bombs, it's, oh, terrible script. You know, it's always like, you can never win.
It's a bizarre world. I mean, if someone's like, you know, I don't care if someone slags my projects off. You know, if they're in the business, fine. You get less criticism from people in the business because they know how difficult it is to do. And I never ever, it's very rare I'll slag anybody else's movie off. Even though I have lots of calls in many cases. But if someone outside the business slags me off, I just say, it's fine, I've seen all your movies. And it just shuts them down. And it's over the years, I've developed This goes back to the working class writers thing in many respects. I've developed one of the rules I say to people, one of the bits of advice I give is when you start out writing, watch the Terry Thomas movie School for Scoundrel.
Oh, one of my favourites.
And mine. Yeah. And it will teach you how to deal with people who want to belittle you. And it will teach you really quickly. And one example of that is if someone comes to you and they, if you're at a gathering of people, and someone will say, oh, you're a writer. Will I have read anything you've written? That's an attempt to put you on the back foot, because then you're, when the answer to that question is, I don't know what you read. And then it puts the onus back on them to start listing all that sort of stuff. And it's, you've got to be in kind of almost self-defense, especially when you're, you know, not your kind of traditional stereotypical writer like I am.
Yeah, we need to start a brand new school of one-upmanship, don't we? That's what we need to do.
I stopped playing that game. When every writer, when they start, so irrespective, I mean, we came into writing in a very odd route, and we'd sold, I mean, I'd done 4 books really before I started to encounter any other writers, and we had a market, we'd sold a lot of books. And then I started to discover, well, the way we got into writing wasn't typical. It was unique, almost unique. Almost immediately, I started to try and play the literary game so that I would fit in. And it's only over the last couple of years, it's just like, well, I don't have to fit in. I'm already doing it. I'm doing what I do, and it's working.
Absolutely.
So if they don't like, you know, if they don't like the way I work, if they don't like the way I market or whatever, and there are a lot of people who don't, that's not my problem. You know, I'm out here selling books to my market. I know what my market needs. I mean, you know, I keep as close contact as I can with them, and I'll give them what they want. And if you give them what they want, you'll keep selling books. And that's basic commerce.
Dougie, who are they, your market, and what do they want?
My market is me and blokes like me.
People listening to this might not know who you are or what type of a person you are. So when you say that the people you write for are like you, describe yourself then.
My market, you know, is just, it's guys like me, just blokes who like good, entertaining stories, an element of nostalgia maybe, situations, places that they can put themselves into, things they recognise, characters they can associate with, and just stuff that entertains them. They're not necessarily traditional readers. They know if they read my stuff, they're not going to get, you know, the mist lay over the meadow when he stepped out of the front door. It's like he stepped out of the front door, because they're not stupid. They can paint these pictures in their own heads. I mean, someone did say to me once that the crew in particular read like a film script. And I took that as a real compliment, because it means that it involves the reader in the process of developing a story. And it's interesting, certainly it's happened a lot within The Know. Loads of people have been in touch with me who've read it, who've said we've read it in 1 or 2 or 3 hits, because we just wanted to keep the story going. Someone put a thing on Twitter this morning of them sitting on a step on a, you know, in the distance is a sea and a beach, and he said, just finished it, had to finish it. And that's as a writer, that's all you can want. If you can leave them wanting more, you've done your job. My readers, and I don't mean this in any sort of detrimental sense, they're not the sort of blokes who will go in, you know, Iconic Books in Tring or whatever the name of the bookshops are, or they'll hunt out these little bookstores when they're on holiday or spend the weekends going around antique book fairs. They're guys who click on the internet and go on Amazon, or they'll buy a book from W.H. Smith's at Euston Station, or they'll maybe walk into Waterston's when their missus is in a clothes shop across the road. That's my market, and they've served me really well, and I hope I've served them really well, and I will continue to do it as long as they want me.
I mean, I've always said this. I mean, that there's, you know, there's clothes shops for every taste and for every budget. There's and for every sort of sensibility, you know, there's electronic shops the same way. You know, you've got everything from your pound shops to Harrods. books should reflect that as well. There should be books for every kind of reader. You know,
this was a tragedy of book page sports pages closing. You know, because that whole that shop was like Mecca in London. Yeah. I used to, if I went into London, I went to sports pages, and when it disappeared, it left a big void which is still yet to be filled. I mean, that leads on to another debate. Now, when this lockdown started, I knew In the Know was coming, you know, May 14th. And all of a sudden, all the indie bookstores are screaming, you know, we're going out of business, blah, blah, help us, help us, help us. So I thought, well, I've got a book coming out. I'm quite happy to post my readers in their direction if that's what they want. So I mailed loads of them, probably at least 28, 29 bookstores. And said, look, my new book's coming out. Are you going to stock it? If you're going to stock it, I'll be happy to post people in your direction. Bang. Two of them replied to me. And both of those said, well, we won't stock it, but we'll order it. Oh, bollocks to that. If you're not going to help me out, why should I be helping you out? I'm literally selling books. If you're not going to be the catalyst to help me do that, Amazon certainly will, and Amazon certainly have. And I've, you know, this works both ways. We're either all in this together or we're not. And clearly, we are not. And some of us who are out here trying to earn a living selling books, or earning a living selling books, to be honest, I have no loyalty to bookshops, because they've certainly shown me no loyalty. And the constant criticism of Amazon as the big monster, you know, the big bad beast. My career is built on the back of Amazon, who are literally 2 miles up the road from me. And every time I drive past, I say, thank you very much. Sorry, if that upsets people again, I really don't care.
On that controversial note, we've come to the end of part one of Dougie Brimson on Weed Like a Word. Coming up in part two of this episode, we'll be hearing more about the challenges of getting working class writers published, and celebrity stories from his films, I hope.
Well, that's a word.
And also ebooks versus paperbacks. That's coming up in part two.